truthful statement. You should know that it's absolutely true. It's a long haftorah. We'll only be able to get through parts of it. But whatever we're able to accomplish will stand us in good stead. The parasha of the week is Parashat Chukat. It's not going to be too difficult to see what the relationship between the Sedra and the Haftorah is, but let me tell you the salient features of the parasha that you have to know in order to understand the Haftorah. The beginning of Parashat Chukat is the parasha of Parah Aduma, the red heifer, which nobody understands. So we're not going to talk about the Parah Aduma. Okay? We're not going to talk about the Parah Aduma. Now, in Parashat Chukat, right after the parasha of Parah Aduma, the Pasuk says, Vayavo'u b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edo midbar tzin, the entire community of the children of Israel came to Midbar Tzin b'chodesh harishon, in the first month. You don't have this on your sheet. I'm reading from the parasha. Vayeshev ha'am b'kodesh, and the people settled down in Kodesh. Vatomos sham Miriam, and Miriam died there. Do you know what has happened now between the pasuk before and this pasuk? In the wink of an eye, an augenblick, 38 years have passed. Parshas Chukas takes us to the last year in the desert, the 40th year. Not only that, it is also going to begin the journey of the Jewish people through Eiver HaYarden, the other side of the Jordan. For the first time in 40 years, Jews are going to come in contact with other nations, and we're going to watch how they react and how they respond. The first ones that they come in contact with are Edom. Edom is Esav. Moshe Rabbeinu sends a message to Edom, asking Edom, can we travel through your land, which will make our journey to Eretz Yisrael quicker and shorter? And Edom comes out and he says, don't you dare set foot in my land. He mobilizes his forces for battle against the Jewish people. God tells Moshe, no war with Edom, so they begin to move around to the east. Let me just give you a picture of Eiver HaYarden, the other side of the Jordan, the east side of the Jordan. Down in the south is the land of Edom, Esav. Aqaba, and to the east of it, you move north of Edom, and slightly to the east, you're going to have the land of Moab. Immediately above Moab, you're going to have the land of Ammon. Ammon and Moab were both the children of Lot. Torah tells us in Sefer Devarim that God gave portions of land to Ammon and Moab, and we're not permitted to wage war with Ammon and Moab. North, in other words, we have Edom at the bottom. You can imagine Edom to the south, corresponding sort of to Eilat, to Aqaba. You come further up, you have Moab, Ammon. Above Moab and Ammon, you're going to have the land of Gilad, which is the land of the Amori, Sihon, king of the Amori. Immediately above that is the Golan. The Golan already, the Golan Babashan, that already is the land of Og, Melech HaBashan. And then along the Jordan, and right up against the Jordan, there's a whole piece of land that was the land of Sihon Melech HaAmori. Sihon Melech HaAmori. All right? You have the pieces of the puzzle together. Ammon has their own land. Moab has their own land. Sihon has his land, and we're going to soon see how Sihon acquired that land. And now the Jewish people cannot travel through Edom. We're going to find out something that's not said in the Sedra, but is revealed to us in the Haftorah by Yiftach, of all people. Yiftach HaGiladi, whom we look at as having been one of the lesser personalities amongst the prophets. As the Gemara says, Yiftach bedoro kishmuel bedoro. Yiftach in his generation was like Shmuel in his generation. Shmuel was a prophet, a man of God. Yiftach, we'll see what his background is. He doesn't nishkin kaisa yichus, you understand? Nishkin kaisa yichus. Yes. Midyan I was thinking of that. It's nowhere around there at all. Midyan may have been further out in the Arabian Peninsula. It was not. It's simply, I've given you all of the lands that were on the east bank, on the east side of the Jordan. Yiftach, as we're going to see, seems to be a very, not simple, I wouldn't say simple, but he's certainly not in the class of a Shmuel, and that's why they say Yiftach Bedoro. The leader in your generation is like Shmuel in his generation. The end of Parashat Chukat is going to tell us about the battle against Sichon. Now, let me point out, I started saying that one of the things that's revealed to us by Yiftach in the Haftorah that is not said in Torah, Moshe didn't tell us about it, which means that even this Yiftach is the one who makes us aware of a significant aspect of Torah that we would not have known if not for him. And what is it that he reveals? That after we went around the land of Edom, we could have made another shortcut through the land of Moab. Now, it doesn't say anything in Torah about any kind of delegation being sent to Moab, but Yiftach is going to say that Moshe also sent a message to Moab asking, could we please go through your land? We'll pay for whatever water we use, pay for any damages. And Moab refused under all circumstances. You have to also know that there is there's bad blood between Ammon and Moab, the children of Lot, and the Jewish people. And it's enshrined in Torah. Next week's Sedra, this week's Sedra is going to be Chukat. The Sedra after that is going to be Bolak. Bolak ben Tzippor, king of Moab, is the one who enlists Bilam, the great cursor, in order to curse the Jewish people. Though the Jewish people were never any threat to Moab. The bad blood goes back to the relationship between an uncle and his nephew, Avraham and Lot. As far as Torah is concerned, Avraham put himself out for Lot in a lot of ways, and it was never reciprocated. Not only it was never reciprocated, Torah says Ammon and Moab may not enter the congregation of God. Of course, there's a halacha that says only Ammoni velo Ammonit, Moavi velo Moaviyah, Rut, who is a Moaviyah, was permitted. And Torah says, you know why? Al dvara shelo kidmu etchem balechem ubamayim betzeitchem imitzchayim. They didn't come out to welcome you as you passed by their land. They should have come out with bread and water. They should have shown their mishpucha, that they owed everything that they had to Avram and to his seed. Their father wouldn't have been saved from Sodom if not for Avram. Who saved Lot from Sodom? Who saved Lot when Lot was captured by the four mighty kings? Who went and was Moser Nefesh, great self-sacrifice for Lot? Where did all of Lot's wealth come from? Torah says in Parashat Lech Lecha,
that when Avram comes out of Mitzrayim with great wealth, the gam lelot haholech et Avram, and also to Lot, who went with Avram, there was great wealth. Everything that Ammon and Moab had, they owed to Avram. They never reciprocated in kind. If anything, Torah points out two things. They didn't come out with bread and water toward you. They hired the services of Bilam in order to curse you. For this they are not to be forgiven. And this bad blood continues between them for generations. At the end of the Sedra it says the following. Sichon Melech HaAmori, Sichon, king of the Amori, prepares his army to wage war with the Jewish people. It says by Shvi in the Sedra, by Yishlach Yisrael Malachim El Sichon Melech HaAmori, Israel sent messengers to Sichon, the king of the Amori, saying, "Let us cross through your land. We're not going to turn to the right or to the left. We won't drink from your water. We're going to go on the main highway until we pass your land." Sichon didn't permit them to go through their land. Sichon gathered all of his people. He went out to war against Israel. Israel smote him, destroyed him, and conquered all of his lands. And captured all of his lands. His lands were the lands of the Amori. His lands were the lands along the Jordan, immediately to the east of the Jordan. After the lands of Sichon will come Ammon and Moab. We're also going to see, both in the Sedra and the Haftorah, we're going to see the precise boundaries of the land of Sichon. Okay? Go ahead. Edom, Moab, Ammon. Now, Ammon, then Gilad and the Bashan. Okay. Gilad was the Amori, and Ammon and Moab did not start immediately at the Yarden. They started further to the east. In other words, if this is the Yarden, the land right on the other side of the Yarden was not Ammon and Moab. You have to go further out to some place near Amman. There started the land of the Ammon and Moab. In other words, they were not flush up against the Jordan. There was a whole area of Nachal Arnon, Nachal Zored, Nachal Yabok that was not part and parcel of Ammon and Moab. But wait. Anyway, this land, there's a struggle with Sichon, and Israel wins the battle. And now there's one more pasuk you have to know. The other pasuk says the following. Al kein yomru, ki cheshbon ir Sichon melech ha-amori, cheshbon was the city of Sichon, the king of the Amori, v'hu nilcham b'melech Moab harishon. Sichon had waged war against the first king of Moab. Vayikach et kol artzo miyado ad Arnon. He took all of his land from him until the river Arnon. That means that yes, there was a part of Moab that had been conquered by Sichon. And it is this land that Jews take from Sichon. Basically in what can be considered a war of self-defense. They had not threatened him. They had not threatened him. Now we can read the Haftorah. It's a long Haftorah. I told you we're only going to get through part of it. But we have to be able to get as much as we can out of this Haftorah. The Yiftach HaGiladi Hayag Gibor Chayil. Yiftach of Gilad was a mighty man, a man of valor. Vahu ben Isha Zonah, he was the son of a zona. Over here means, in this sense over here, it means a woman who his father had not married with chuppah and kedushin, but she was like a concubine. She was his wife. Vayolad Gilad et Yiftach. Gilad gave birth to Yiftach. Vatelad Eishes Gilad lo banim. Gilad also had a wife with chuppah and kedushin. And the wife of Gilad, she gave birth to sons, Vayigdalu b'nei ha'isha, the son. In other words, there's the isha and the zona. He has two women in his life, an isha and a zona. It would seem clear that Yiftach is born first, and afterwards from the isha there are other children who are born. Vayigorshu et Yiftach, they cast out Yiftach. Vayomrulom, and they told him, Lo tinchal bebeit avinu, you are not going to inherit in our father's house. Ki ben isha acheret ata, you are the son of another woman. By the way, this was completely unjust. Completely unjust from the point of view of halacha. Yiftach has the halacha of a son of, maybe even Bechorah, he is, whatever it is, he is certainly an absolutely legal halachic son of Gilad. They have absolutely no right to cast him out. And they did. We assume that everybody's Jewish over here. They're all Jewish. Sure, they're all Jewish. Huh? Yeah, no. But you were talking. This is Eretz Yisrael. You know, this is amongst the Jewish people. If she would have been from another religion, certainly we would have been told that. No. In other words, one wife that he had was with Chuppah v'Kiddusha, and the other was not Chuppah v'Kiddusha. No. So things like this happened. All Jewish. Vayivrach Yiftach mitei Echov. Yiftach fled from before his brothers. Vayeshiv be'eretz Tov, and he settled down in the land of Tov. Vayitlaktu el Yiftach, and they gathered around Yiftach anoshim reikim, empty people. Vayetzu imo, and they went out with him. In other words, the dregs of society, the oizvors, the people that had no place in society, for whatever reason it was, they were the ones who gathered around Yiftach. He became their leader. He obviously had leadership qualities. It's still amazing to understand how his brothers were able to cast him out, but most probably there were many of them, and there may have been other reasons that people didn't like his mother. Sometime later, the Bnei Amon came to wage war with Israel. When Amon came to wage war with the children of Israel, the elders of Gilad went to take Yiftach back from the land of Tov. And here is there are negotiations. Because they just don't seem to have somebody who has the leadership abilities to take them through this battle. It was a serious battle, and they just were not ready. They weren't ready for it. And they needed somebody, you know, Lahavdul, bring the Gaul back from wherever he was. They should have left them wherever he was, but all right. You know, you bring him out of retirement. Here they had to bring Yiftach back. And they said to Yiftach, come and be for us an officer. Become our chief, and we are going to wage war with the sons of Ammon. It seems that this would be a rehabilitation of Yiftach. He should most probably jump at the opportunity, but that's not what happens. Yiftach is a little smarter than that. Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, "Halo atem sinetam oti, but you've hated me. Vatagorshuni beitovi, you cast me out of my father's house." He says they're all guilty because they remained silent when he was cast out of his father's house. You always hated me. Umadu abasam elayata, why have you come now? Kashitzar lachem? When you're in trouble, you come to me. But otherwise, you didn't come to my aid or assistance. You were collaborators together with my brothers. Here they're in a very difficult position, so the elders of Gilad said to Yiftach, Lochein ato, you're right. Shavno elecho, now we've come back to you. All right, we were wrong. Okay. You want to make a federal case out of it? Okay. V'halachta imanu. So you'll come with us. V'nilchamta b'vnei Amon. And you will wage war with the sons of Amon. Vayitalanu l'rosh l'chol yoshvei Gilad, and you'll be the head of all of the inhabitants of Gilad. Now you have to notice a slight difference in words. When they make the first offer to him in Pasuk 6, They say, you will be a katzin, an officer. V'ni lochamo. We will wage war against Bnei Ammon. After the onslaught of Yiftach, things begin to change. He's not going to be a katzin, but he's going to be the rosh. And then you know what else it says over there? V'nilchamto b'vnei Ammon. You're going to wage war. You know what it means? The offer that they're making to him at first is, you know, you'll be our leader. We're going to wage war. In other words, we're going to be the grace of Balabatim, and you're going to be the guy that's going to do the Schwarz Arbeit. Obviously, what it means, of course, is that once this is all over, we'll throw you to the dogs again. You can go back to the land of Tov. Oh, no, no, no. He's not ready for that. Not ready for that at all. You can't wage war with them. I'm going to do battle. And not only am I going to do battle, I'm going to become the Shofet. He drives a hard bargain. By the way, there are two ways to look at it. One way of looking at it is, listen, the Jewish people are in grave danger. You're concerned over here whether you're going to be a minister or a Ramatkal or the Prime Minister. This is what interests you at a time that Israel is in grave danger. Or you could look at it from another point of view. He was the victim of a gross injustice. And the ones who are negotiating with him now are the ones who are guilty of that gross injustice. And there will not be a Yeshua for Klal Yisrael until that injustice is rectified. And it has to be set straight. The psukim before the Haftorah had said, and here I'll just give you a little bit of a picture of what's going on. Israel had suffered terribly at the hands of Bnei Ammon. They were going through an extremely difficult time. And Israel finally turned to the Jewish people. Israel turned to God. Vayomer Bnei Yisrael, Hashem Bnei Yisrael said to God, Chatanu, Chatanu, we've sinned. Hatzileinu, no, please save us. They removed all idolatry from their midst. And right after this, Ammon gathers their forces in Gilad. Israel gathers their forces in Mitzpah. And when they gather their forces, they say, who's the one who's going to lead us out to battle? We need a leader. We need a leader. So we're talking about a Jewish people that are in the process of doing tshuva. And there is a most unbelievable, really powerful, powerful sentence. A very powerful sentence earlier. Yeah, I'll find it. They removed the foreign gods from their midst. They served God. God's soul couldn't take the suffering of the Jewish people. Vatikzar nafsho ba'amal Yisrael. Vatikzar nafsho. Rashi says, kivyachol, so to speak. Lo hoyo rachvas makom lizbol. God's soul didn't have the place in which to contain the suffering of the Jewish people. Vulikane shom tzoro shohayolo. He felt in great pain because of the suffering of the Jewish people. You know, there are moments that Jews may not be worthy, but despite the fact that they're unworthy, no, God doesn't always work on the basis titnu to kablu. Lo titnu, lo to kablu. You'll be good, I'll be good to you. You're going to be bad, I'll be bad to you. Doesn't work that way. There are moments in history which God simply cannot tolerate the suffering of the Jewish people. And he acts precisely because of that. They don't have to be worthy. They don't have to be tzaddikim. They don't have to be Gedolei Olam. He can't take it anymore. And this is a point in time where God can't take it anymore. Alright? Back to our Haftarah. So he drives a hard bargain, and they agree to his bargain. Vayomer Yiftach al Sitnei Gilad. Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, Im Meshivim Atem Oti Lilachem B'Bnei Amon, if you will bring me back in order that I should wage war with B'Nei Amon, V'Natan Hashem Otam Lefanai, and God will give them before me. Do you understand that in this whole conversation, the first one to mention the name of God is Yiftach? Yiftach is not ready to take credit that he will vanquish the enemy. I will be your head. You know what he also did over here? He put them in their place. Because take a look at the next pasuk. Hashem, all of a sudden they're frummies now. Hashem Yeshomea Benoteinu, God is the one who should hear us. In lo kidvar chokenase, if we won't do as we say, agreed. Vayelech Yiftach Mzikne Gilad, Yiftach went with the elders of Gilad. Vayosimu homo toa aleim l'rosh, the entire people. There's another part of the bargain that we know right now. Another extremely important part of the bargain. How does he know that these elders represent the will of the people? Because they talk as though they represent the people? There are governments that don't represent the will of the people at all. There are governments who may even trample the will of the people. Things like that have happened in history. What he wants is that he should be accepted by the people. Because ultimately, the people, the will of the people, makes all the difference. Just as we learned last week with regard to Shaul appointing a king over them. It had to be the will of the people. God never imposes a leader on the Jewish people. We're not talking about spiritual. Moshe Rabbeinu was imposed on Klal Yisrael. He was God's representative. But a political or a military leader is not imposed upon the people. It has to be the will of the people. So it says, Vayelech Yiftach Mzikne Gilad, Yiftach went for the elders of Gilad, Vayesimu Ha'om Oto Aleim L'Rosh. The people, they accepted him upon themselves as a head and an officer. Vayedaber et Yiftach et kol divrei devarov ufnei Hashem b'mitzvah. He stands up in mitzvah and he speaks to God. Now, really begins the ikkar of the Haftarah, but whatever we will get, we will get. Vayishlach Yiftach malachim emelach b'nei Amon. Yiftach sent messengers to the king of the sons of Ammon, saying, Mali v'loch, what do you have against us? Kibata elai lihilachem b'arzi, that you've come against me to wage war in my land. What's this all about? Why have you gathered your forces to wage war? What do you want from us? Vayom emelach b'nei Amon el malachei Yiftach. The king of B'nai Amun said to the messengers of Yiftach, Ki lakach Yisrael et Arzi, because Israel took my land, Ba'alotami Mitzrayim, when he came up out of Egypt. Me Arnon, Va'ad Hayabok, Va'ad Hayardain. Arnon is a river. Imagine, the southern boundary of this land is Arnon. The northern boundary is the river Yabok. And the western boundary is the Jordan. Imagine the Jordan. And there, somewhere below the Kinneret, is the Yabok. Somewhere around the Yam HaMelech is the Arnon. Two rivers coming out from the Yarden. Arnon, Yabok, Yarden. What's to the east? Ammon and Moab. That's to the east. Where the desert begins, that's Ammon and Moab. So he says, that parcel of land you took from us. You took from us. By the way, that parcel of land is precisely the land of Sichon. Those are the boundaries of the land of Sichon, who was king of the Amori, from whom they took it. True, that Sichon had waged war against the first king of Moab and had taken this land from him. But we never waged war with Moab. Not only we never waged war with Moab, We were not permitted to wage war with Moab. God says in Parshas Devarim, it says, Al totzad et Moab, v'al tidgar b'milchama. Don't oppress Moab, and don't initiate battle against them. Anyway, he comes here, we're going to see right away, it's 300 years after the fact. 300 years after the fact, they come and say, no, they haven't complained in 300 years. 300 years. Nobody said a word. You didn't hear anybody complain that this land has been stolen. It's 300 years later, and all of a sudden, here comes this great claim. Watch. You took, Amon says, you took this land when we came out of Egypt, from Arnon to Yabok to the Yarden, but now, Hashiva attend the Shalom, give it back in peace. By Yosef od Yiftach, here it becomes important. Everything is important, but it's important. How's he going to respond? What are the responses what responses could Yiftach come up with? He can go to war. Huh? What would the Machane HaShalom say about that? He has other options. He can say, well, let's partition the land. Right? That's another possibility. Let's partition the land. There is, of course, a third possibility. We'll take down every Jewish city there and destroy it utterly. And here, take it. Take it. It's yours. It's yours. Historically, it's not so. So what? History bores some people. All right. Let's see how Yiftach is going to respond. Yiftach went again and he sent messengers to the king of Ammon by Yomalo, Ko Omar Yiftach. You know, when you begin with Ko Omar Yiftach, then you can understand that this is serious. This is Yiftach's manifesto. This is not Mitchell or Tenet. This is Yiftach, you understand? This is a very, very important statement that's being made. By the way, you also have to use your imagination a little bit. Why indeed do they come and claim this land now? Certainly not because it's justified. You know why they come? Because they feel that at this particular moment in history, they're strong and we're weak, and therefore they can walk over us. You wait for the right moment. You're right. They're weak. You know what you really need? You know, this is nothing more than an excuse for war. It's an excuse for war. Hitler, Yamach Shemoy, wanted the Sudetenland. He wanted the Polish corridor. He wanted Danzig. Each one of them was no more than an excuse to go to battle. The match that lights the tinderbox that's Europe. This is no more than simple, pure blackmail. That's exactly what it is. It's nothing more than that. In addition to the fact, of course, that what's involved over here is a complete rewriting of history. Even though, at some point, we're going to have to come face to face with the history of it. But let's go. Kol Yiftach. Lo lakach Yisrael et eretz Moab et eretz b'nei Amon. Israel did not take the land of Moab or the land of b'nei Amon. We didn't take anything from you. By the way, what's interesting over here is, even when this land belonged to somebody, it belonged to Moab. And who's coming to wage war? Amon is coming to wage war. So he wants to remind them that even if it is, as you say, you're not the ones to claim it. You're not Moab. You're Amon. You know what it is? You're just looking for an excuse to go to war. And now he gives them a lesson in history. This lesson in history is most probably, who was it? Was it Carter who had to sit and listen to Begin's talking about history or something? Gunish Geholfen, you understand? But here he says, Ki bar lo tami Mitzrayim, when they came out of Egypt, Vayelech Yisrael b'midbar ad Yamsuf, Israel went through the desert to the Yamsuf, Vayavo Kadesh, and he came to Kadesh. Kadesh was the southern tip of the Negev, or the northern part of the Sinai Desert. Kodesh is the point that they reach in this Sedra, and that's when Miriam dies. And from Kodesh, they're going to continue on around Edom, around Moab, until they come to the land of Sichon. Israel, this is all in the Sedra. All of this history is here. Yisrael sent messengers to the king of Edom saying, let me please cross through your land. And the king of Edom didn't listen. Now, this next part of the Pasuk is something that is revealed, that I told you earlier, is revealed to us by Yiftach. We don't know it from Torah. The Gamal Melech Moav Shalah below Ava. He also sent a message to the king of Moab asking, let us go through. The low over, and he didn't want to let us go through. So Israel remained in Kodesh and bided its time until it would figure out what the next step was going to be. So you know what they did? Then they moved from Kodesh. Vayelech Bamidbar, Kodesh, northern Sinai, they went eastward into the Arabian desert. And then they started going northward. So they passed, on the left, they passed Edom, they passed Moab, and then they came to the land of Sichon. Vayelech Bamidbar, Vayosef went around the land of Edom, and around the land of Moab. Vayobo Mimizrach Shemesh, from the east, he came to the land of Moab, Vayachanun Be'eve Arnon, and they encamped on the other side of the Arnon. Velobo Begvul Moab, we never set foot within the boundaries of Moab. Ki Arnon, because the river Arnon was the Gvul of Moab, was the boundary of Moab, and we sat on the other side. And then, all of this is in the Sedra. Israel sent messengers to Sichon, the king of the Amori, the king of Cheshbon. Yisrael said to him, let us go through your land until my place. I just want to go through in order that I can get to my place, Eretz Yisrael. Follow him in Sichon, which is Israel Avor Bigvulo, and Sichon didn't trust Israel to go through his boundary. Vayesef Sichon et Kolamo, and Sichon gathered all of his people. Vayachanu biYotzo, all of this is described in the Sedra. They encamped in Yotzo. Vayilochem in Israel, and he waged war with Israel. Vayitein Hashem lekei Israel et Sichon et Kolamo biYad Yisrael, and God, the God of Israel, gave Sichon and all of his people into the hands of Israel, and they smote them. Vayirash Yisrael et kol eretz ha'emori yoshev ha'aretz ha'hi. Every word is important. What they did was, Israel took possession of the whole land of the Emori, those who lived in that land. Vayirshu et kol gvul ha'emori, they inherited the entire boundary of the Amori. Now he's going to give you the boundaries again. These are the precise boundaries that the king of Ammon said before are our land. Kol gvul ha'emori, from the Arnon, the river Arnon in the south, to the river Yabok in the north, umin hamidbar, and from the desert, va'ad hayarden, that parcel of land. We have now, we have all four sides of the land. The Arnon in the south, the Yabok in the north, Yardane in the west, the beginning of the desert in the east. That's the parcel of land we're talking about. And he says, we never waged war with Moab. We didn't set foot in the land of Moab. Never, never. We never waged war with you. V'atah, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Horish et Amodi, Mipnei Amo Yisrael, V'atah Tidoshenu. God, the God of Israel, gave us that land. And you want to inherit it? God gave us that land. He wasn't even embarrassed about saying it. He wasn't embarrassed about saying that God gave us the land. And then he gets a little... He's ready to upset them. Halo et asher yorishcho kemosh elohecho oto tidosh. That which your God, whose name is Kemosh, what Kemosh gives you, that you will have. That kol asher horish Hashem Elokeinu mipaneinu oto nidash, and all of those that God cast out from before us, that we're going to inherit. The Reb Meir Simcha, the Meir Shechachma, asks a fascinating question. How does Gidon say out of his mouth something that leaves the impression as though, you know, there's Kemosh and the God of Israel? Now, whatever Kemosh gives you, okay, whatever God gives us, in other words, they're sort of chas v'shalom, as though there are equals. There's Kemosh and Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Goyen reads something so carefully. He says, take a look at the difference between the two parts of the pasuk. When he's talking about Kemosh, he talks in future tense. When he talks about what God gave Israel, he speaks in past tense. So in other words, he's not saying that Kemosh is capable of doing anything. Mivel Shenzen already what Kemosh is going to give you. He's not putting them on the same, on par with one another. No. That which God gave us, we have it. That's ours. You see, when it comes down to the bottom line, Yiftach must invoke the name of God. Why must he invoke the name of God? Why does he have to say what he's really resorting to right now is clearly the first Rashi in Chumash. You all know it. I don't even have to tell you the first Rashi in Chumash. That's all. God is the one who gives lands to the people of the earth. He has to use that, because when you come down, all right, let's ask you a question, Yiftach. Before Sichon conquered that land, whose land was it? Moab. It was Moab. So now, what about the historical rights of Moab to that land? Moab had it before Sichon. And what happens if the king is going to send back a message to him? Yes, we know that you didn't wage war with Moab, you waged war with Sichon. But Sichon was an international gangster. He stole the land from Moab. Originally, it was the land of Moab. Ultimately, you can always be put up with your back against the wall, and there's no other choice but to say, the Rebbe Shem is the one who makes these decisions, not mere mortals. If you're going to use the divine, then you're going to have an argument. If you're not going to have the divine, you're going to lose it. If you don't believe b'emunah shlema that the Rebbe Shem gave you the land, you will never be able to prove to anybody on the face of this earth that you have any rights here whatsoever. Forget about it. There was always somebody before. And if there wasn't somebody before, Haaretz, the Rishoyim. And I don't use that term about Jews too often. I had an interview with Yasser Yimach Shemay Arafat on Friday in the paper, you understand? Can you imagine, I don't know, the Jewish press sending 1942 or 43, sending somebody to interview Hitler in the middle of the war? I shouldn't have used the Jewish press. Give me some other fresh look in a newspaper. Jewish press is a good newspaper. The Haaretz would have interviewed Hitler in 1942-43. They would have burned down the Haaretz. And not only that, these people are so manipulative. They have a picture of Arafat in the paper. Big one. He looks like what a wonderful Saba. Such a benign, kindly old man. You know, they manipulate us. You have to know that 24 hours a day, you're being manipulated. It's a terrible thing. I'm not going to go into that now, but it's a terrible thing. We're being manipulated. Your minds are mamish being formed and fashioned and forged against your will, unless you're strong enough. Huh? I can't hear what? No, that's not an answer. Not to buy it. Let me ask you, for 4 years, if you didn't buy the Haaretz for 4 years, you didn't believe beyond any shadow of a doubt that the government was going to indict Sharon and Appel? It wasn't in every newspaper and in every... That was the common wisdom of the whole country. And all of a sudden you find out it's not true, or it may not be true. You're being manipulated in Ma'ariv. You're being manipulated in your Diot, on Arutz 1, on Arutz 2, on Galei Tzahal. You're being manipulated all the time. And if you think that the only manipulation is Haaretz, you're making a big mistake. And if anything, at least I know that I'm being manipulated by the Haaretz, so I can fight it. What does he claim? He claims we were here first. They were here first.
the Jebusites, whom David threw out of Jerusalem. The Jebusites were the Palestinians. We came here before Jews came here. You can always pull that, and they're pulling it. They're pulling it off. If you don't reach the point at which you're going to say, who cares what you are? God gave us this land. If you can't say that, you're in terrible trouble. That's exact. Yiftach knows precisely that. Yiftach is saying, when push comes to shove, there are really two things that are important. One, that you have to believe that God gave it to you. Then you're going to be ready to fight. And number two, you have to be strong enough to fight. If you're not going to be ready to fight, either because you don't have the will or you don't have the way, then you're lost. But he makes it very clear that this is ultimately the claim when it all comes down to it. Et asher yorish ha-kemosh, what Kemosh is going to give you, that will be yours. And what God has given us is that which will be ours. Viato, he goes on to say, you know, we may even pull this off. Hatov, tov atom ibolek ben tzipa melech Moav. Are you better than Bolak ben Tzipor, the king of Moab? Harov rov im Yisrael? Did he ever do battle with Israel? Im nilcham bom? Did he wage war with them? If this land, if Moab really felt they had a claim to the land, why didn't Bolak go to work? Why didn't he go to war? B'shevet Yisrael b'cheshbon, when Israel settled into Cheshbon, Ube b'notero, and the cities around it, Ube Aror, Ube b'notero, and Aror and all the cities, Ube chol horim asher al-yidei Arnon, all the cities that are around the river Arnon, Shlosh be'od shana, umadua lo yitzaltam ba'etai, 300 years you didn't claim. Why didn't you save it during that time? If you truly felt that it was yours, you should have claimed. You should have fought. You should have negotiated. You should have done something. V'anochi lo chatosi loch. I have not sinned to you. V'atau seyti ra'ah li'lochem bi. And you're doing bad, evil, to wage war with me. Yishbot Hashem hashofet hayom. God who judges today shall judge bein b'nei Yisrael u'bein b'nei Amon. Between the children of Israel and the children of Amon. This is an unbelievable speech by a Jewish leader, or an unbelievable message from Yiftach to the Bnei Amon. And here we're talking about a leader whose beginnings were not really terribly complimentary. One may have looked at him as the real out. I mean, literally an outcast. He was cast out. Amazing that he hadn't lost faith. Huh? He didn't blame God. It is amazing. I agree with you that it's amazing. Somebody under those circumstances might well very well have said, I want nothing to do with Jews nor with their God. I've been wronged. I've been hurt. I've been robbed. And Ziknei Gilad were there and said nothing. Ziknei Gilad, the elders of Gilad, said nothing and did nothing. And they even have the nerve now to come when they find themselves in terrible straits. They come now in order to call on me to assist them. What you get over here is a lesson on how you're supposed to be able to deal with the enemies of Israel head on. It's a lesson we've never learned. We don't begin to learn the lesson. Unfortunately, it's not a... It is as yet not a religious country, and that's a terrible, terrible problem. And it's something that we suffer from every day. Every day we suffer from it here. But I always say that we're in part guilty. They came and they built, and we didn't come. We're the Johnny Come Latelys over here, and therefore we suffer. There's no way. And I have to say, the first one who did claim on the basis of Tanakh was Ben Gurion, or really the second, Rav Kook before him, placed the Tanakh
before either the Peel Commission, one of the, no, earlier than the Peel Commission, a commission in 1929 when they were, by the way, it started long ago. In 1929, they didn't want to let Jews daven at the Kotel, because the Kotel's not yours. So there were the hearings about the Kotel. In 37, before a UN commission, so Ben Gurion said it's the Tanakh is our claim to Eretz Yisrael. Who's talking about Tanakh? The moment you're ready to give up parts of Eretz Yisrael, then of course you have already rejected Tanakh. Another thing that's interesting over here is here is a Haftorah that could just as well be the Haftorah for Parashas Balak as it is the Haftorah for Parashas Chukas. So of course in Yitz Hashem next week when we learn the Haftorah for Parashat Balak, that's next week's Sedra, so then we'll be able to see why Chazal chose the Haftorah for Parashas Balak, a different one, when you have pretty much Balak and Melech Moav, all are mentioned over here. It's true, in the Haftorah next week, it's going to be not only Balak is going to be mentioned, but Bilam is going to be mentioned. And that's what's probably going to be the main reason for the Haftorah here. But over here we're talking about, number one, precisely the history that's described in the Haftorah is the history that comes directly from the Psukim in Torah. The ultimate struggle that's to take place in the days of Yiftach dates back 300 years earlier. And by the way, I should have xeroxed this for you. When he says Shlosh Meot Shana, the Seder Olam, the order of chronology, figures out that Yiftach is not using a round figure. It's precisely, nearly to the day, 300 years from the time that the Jews, it was the 300, the tricentenary? Centennial? 300 years from the time of the struggle against Sichon and Og until this battle. Let's go further. The king of the sons of Ammon did not listen to the words of Yiftach that he had sent him. Watch. Do you watch step by step? Yiftach and Shimshon. It says by Shimshon that Ruach Hashem came over him and he tore the lion in half. But Shimshon is different than Yiftach because Shimshon, there was a malach who told his parents that he's going to be born. V'hu yachel lahoshian, he's going to begin to save the Jewish people from the hands of the Plishtim. Yiftach and Gideon are the only ones that in a sense don't seem to have been born to greatness. And if anything, they are the ones that greatness is thrust upon them, and then they rise to the challenge of the greatness. The Yiftach who is able to pray before God in Mitzvah, the Yiftach who's able to say, I'm going to wage war, but it's only going to be the Rebbe Yisrael who's going to be victorious. That Yiftach, that Oizvorf, who is able to tell B'nai Ammon that God is the one who makes the decisions of history, is the one who is Zeiche Vatihi Olav Ruach Hashem, that the Spirit of God came over him. Vayavur et HaGilad, he crossed through Gilad, Ve'et Menashe, and he went through the land of Menashe. Vayavur et Mitzpe Gilad, and he passed through Mitzpe Gilad. In other words, he's traveling all the way until he comes. He's going to bring the battle to the enemy until he comes to Bnei Ammon. Vayida Yiftach Nedal Hashem, Vayoma Yiftach, the vow. He made the vow before God and he said, Im Natan Titein Et Bnei Ammon Biyadi, if you will give Bnei Ammon Biyadi, for Hoyah Yotzei Asher Yotzei Midaltei Beiti Likrati, Bishuvi Bishalom, that which comes out of the door of my house when I come back in peace, for my battle against Bnei Amon, v'hoyal Hashem shall be to God v'hali tiu ola, and I will bring it as an ola. This is, of course, the tragic vow. By the way, here is also a fascinating relationship to the Sedra. In the Sedra, it says after the death of Aaron, there was an attack by Kenani Melech Arad, Vayish Mimenu Shevi, and they captured a captive. And Rashi says in that battle, Shifcha Achas, one maidservant was captured. And it says in the parsha that Klal Yisrael made a vow. Vayishma Knani Melech Arad Yosheva Negev Kibor Yisrael. Yeah, and it says, Vayida Yisrael Nedal Hashem. Israel made a vow to God. Vayomi Imnatom Titei. Nearly the same words. If you will give Ha'am Azeh Biadi V'Hacharamti Yatoreim, I will destroy or I will sanctify their cities. Vayishma Hashem Bekol Yisrael. God listened to the voice of Israel, and He gave the Canaan into their hands. Vayikar Hashem Avakvahu Chorma. Here is also a vow, but the vow was not the unfortunate vow that was made by Yiftach. And of course it's merciful that the Haftorah does not take us a few psukim later after the Haftorah. We find out the tragedy there. There are two reasons why it's not part of the Haftorah. Because if that would be part of the Haftorah, there's not a chance in the world that we'd be able to learn this Haftorah in one shiur. And the second thing is, just like a Sedra never ends with something bad, here too the Haftorah is not going to end with something bad. On the contrary, it's going to end with great victory. And it says, Vayavo Yiftach el Bnei Amon lilochem bom, Vayitnem Hashem b'yodah. He crossed over to Bnei Amon. God gave them into his hands. Vayakem, and he smote them from Aroer ad Boachom minit, Esrim ir, Vad Ovel Kromin, Makor Gedolom Yod, Vayikonu Bnei Amon b'Bnei Yisrael. And the children of Amon were subdued before the children of Israel. It ends with the great success. Yes. What? Because when he comes home, the first one who walks out toward him is his one and only daughter. And he has made a vow that what will come out of the door of his house first, he will bring as an ola before God. So now you're asking the question for which I need another 2 hours. That's why the Haftorah simply didn't end with that. Now wait a minute. Yes, so you're opening up the whole psychology. Huh? She could have been saved. It could have been resolved. If he would have been Matanada, that's all. So why didn't he? Yeah, well, whatever it was, he never married. He certainly didn't have any right to kill her. You see, I didn't want to mention it. Huh?